Welcome to episode 27 of Red Board Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugamule. Today my guest is Marshall Sterling, the horse racing Twitter weatherman. We talk about some races from last weekend's card at the fairgrounds. Some angles we cover are when to take a first-time starter in a maiden race, betting back pace horses that win the pace battle but lose the race, and how sometimes even a second choice in the market can be an overlay. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest, Marshall Sterling. Marshall, how are you today?
I'm good, Spencer. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. Saving my life once again. So I know I've had you on once before. You are actually you're the first person to be on twice not named Pierre Thomas Fornatel. I don't know if we talked much about your process the first time you were on. What is your process when handicapping a race from top to bottom?
Yeah, so my process is really quite consistent throughout. I think consistency is the biggest key when it comes to going over races, regardless of whether you're in for $1 million or in for $20. Your process shouldn't change. And if it does, you need to reevaluate your process. I start out by looking through DRF Formulator. I put in race notes and trip notes for almost every horse. I also try to go back after every race and put in little notes saying, you know, oh, bad trip or five wide, or even if the track, for instance, if the track is biased in some way, shape, or form, I try to put in a little note. It starts out with Formulator. I will typically use Optics EQ for pace and for trying to evaluate race shape, as well as using Timeform for pace figures as well, because I think Craig Mikowski does a fantastic job being transparent about his figures and how everything has kind of developed over there.
Craig is definitely one of the best ones. Now, obviously, we have four pillars when it comes to handicapping: form, pace, speed figures, and class. Do you have like a specific one of those four that you kind of call yourself? Like most people are class handicappers or pace.
Sure. I think that the thing that I use the most is pace, which is honestly the most subjective. So that can be kind of difficult to quantify. A lot of it just has to do with watching races. I try to watch every weekend. I try to get on and at least watch every race from cards that I really care about. And especially during the Kentucky Derby Trail, I want to make sure that I watch every race leading up to that prep race, just because, again, you're going to find little things in the track, or you're going to find little tidbits here and there that may help you evaluate that race better. So I'm much more of a pace guy. I do rely on speed figures pretty heavily, but I'm trying to get away from that just because of the subjectivity that comes along with the three different products that I use. And they're typically aligned, but every once in a while you get really goofy races where all three will be very different. And those are ones you have to dig into more.
I know that you're on Twitter. You're known to a lot of people in at least our circle as the Twitterverse weatherman. What is a daily day in the life of the Twitterverse weatherman? I'm sure you have a ton of people asking you what certain tracks are looking like for that day or for the weekend.
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, especially with these Kentucky Derby prep races, a lot of people are pretty invested as to what the weather is going to be like. And especially with the NHC last weekend or the weekend prior, there was a lot of people that were trying to reach out to get a feel just because it was a pretty active weather pattern. I wake up every morning and usually spend about 45 minutes to an hour looking at local weather for where I live in Minnesota. And then I try to expand that into regional weather as well, into the Northeast and Southeast. And it just depends too. If people ask, I usually try to spend an extra 15, 20, 30 minutes on trying to forecast for them, depending on what they need.
Has there ever been now obviously everyone says, oh, the weatherman can be right or wrong, and he's still going to have a day job at the end of the day. Has there ever been one that you were like so sure of, like, yeah, it's going to be sunny completely, and then an hour later it's like, oh, it's going to be showers left and right for the whole day.
Yeah, there was one time where I was texting Jonathan Kinchin, and I was telling him, oh, yeah, the rain's going to end in like 15 minutes. And then 15 minutes later, the rain got heavier. and I was just like, oh, man, thanks for proving me wrong. And then I looked at radar again, and there was a strong thunderstorm that was moving through that just had built up right there. So it just like horse racing, weather will prove you wrong the second you're very confident about what you think you know.
You are also part of the Daily Gallop season going through these prep races. What are your thoughts so far? I know you were part of it also when we were just doing the weekly head-to-heads. Now we've made a season out of it with 20 handicappers.
Yeah, I love the thought. I love being able to handicap these races and kind of have pride on the line. The good thing for me is my two highest scores that I ever had were in the first 2 weeks. So that was really good and gave me a lot of confidence going into this card I was ready to go.
Well, if you're ready to go, Marshall, I'm ready to go. What do you say we get into our three races from today? The first race being race three from the Fairgrounds. It was a maiden special weight going 6 furlongs on the dirt. A couple first-time starters, a couple experienced horses. What do you try and do in these types of races?
So the first thing I do is try to evaluate the horses that have ran already. At least we have some data points to look at and try to understand either why they didn't win the race, whether it was pace-related, whether it was class-related, or, you know, track conditions too, especially this time of the year, can really favor or hinder horses going forward. So I try to evaluate that stuff and then go into some of the pedigree analysis with a lot of the first-time starters as well to try to get a good balance of whether I think that the horses that have started are going to be able to progress and do well, or whether I'm going to be looking at first-time starters to kind of upset the apple cart.
When you looked at this race, did it seem like it was going to be more first-time heavy, or were you looking at the horses with experience?
My very first pick that I really liked was the number one, Liam's Tempest. I thought that his first race was on the grass. It looked like, you know, he showed speed on the grass, which I really did like. And his pedigree suggested to me that he should do better on dirt. And so I really thought that he could show some speed out of the gate. And also you have Tom Amos as a second time starter who is really good with younger horses. So I really liked him as a horse that had started in the past. Otherwise, the other horses that had started before, I just wasn't really a fan of. You know, the number 8 Ready For My Close-Up, who is taking money up to post time, you know, the second time starter for Steve Asmussen, I really didn't like his debut. He did stumble out of the gate and found trouble 2 or 3 times during the race, but I really felt that he just ran evenly regardless, that there wasn't anything that really kind of wowed me about that. And especially considering his 5-2 price coming up to post here, I really wasn't a fan of that price going into it.
I think a lot of people, when you look at Ready For My Close-Up with the 55 buyer, that was the highest buyer last time out, everyone will look at that, but there wasn't really any advantage. The Legal Limit had ran a 54, Salacious Accusion had ran 53 in the last race, and then had 2 Bullet Works coming into this. The horse I ended up on was the number 3 Nasty for LNJ Foxwoods, Brad Cox, Sean Bridgemahan. The jockey-trainer combo in 47 starts is 32% winners with a $2.51 ROI. The pedigree Scream Dirt Sprint from the family side, both of the siblings had both won $100,000 already. Street Sense tells me it's going to be long on the top, but I thought it was just going to be a race. The horses had good works. Brad Cox, first-time starter Dirt Sprint, maiden special weight, 17% for formulator stats. I just, when you look at the horses that had experience, it just, they all seem so closely tucked together. When I see that, I usually think it's time for a first-time starter to step up and do something.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that all of the ones who had started were all kind of bundled together. I was slightly interested in Chick Be Quick, just going turf to dirt with Fast Anna as the sire. But the dam side was pretty turfy with a dam out of Empire Maker. And then that led me to Liam's Tempest, whom I thought had more dirt pedigree than turf, and running a 44, I thought could not only improve going from 2 to 3, but would also improve going turf to dirt. I also liked Ain't No Elmers too. So for me, I liked the 1, 2, and 3. Ain't No Elmers out of Golden Sands. Golden Sands has been a really good sire so far. Yeah, very precocious and fast. We had a bullet work on January 29th out of the gate. So I thought maybe Ain't No Elmers and Liam's Tempest could show some speed out of the gate. And I also thought that Nasty would come out running and kind of sit kind of the pocket trip behind those two, getting position early and being able to make first run at the leader. So I definitely agree with Nasty and the first time starters Ain't No Elmers as well. So
I know that I didn't prep you for this question, but you obviously talked about two horses going turf to dirt. Are there certain angles or certain things you're looking for in the past performance that could tell you that this horse will look, that will be good? Obviously the pedigree matters, but is it sometimes what you see with a trainer or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables, but obviously Tom Amos, as a trainer, I kind of trust him, to be able to move a horse forward off their second start. And, also trust the fact that he was using, Indiana Grand, that turf, 5 furlong turf race, as more of a foundational type, let's see what we have sort of race. So there isn't any sort of hard and fast rule. It's more or less just my perception, and especially watching the race as well, what I kind of think about that horse moving forward.
What did you do from a wagering standpoint in this race? Did you do anything? And who did you also have in the contest that we had done on Saturday?
So In the contest, I had Liam's Tempest, and I had Ain't No Elmers. And then I had done some key box exactas keying Liam's Tempest, especially considering that he went up to 7-1 from his 9-2 morning line coming into post. So I really liked that price. I thought that was a good price. And so I keyed Liam's Tempest and then had Ain't No Elmers and Nasty as well.
For me, it was just Nasty across the board. This is the horse I picked also in the contest in my matchup. We won't talk about how I did in the contest. We'll just know I did not win my matchup. Let's leave it at that. Let's see what happened in race 3 at the fairgrounds right now. Hey guys, just so you know, had a little bit of trouble getting the race replays in for this week's show. So just for this show this week, there won't be any race replays. Please enjoy the rest of the show. Ain't No Elmers, the first-time starter for Brett Calhoun, gets it done paying $7.80 with a buyer of $74. I know he wasn't your pick on top. Nice run for this first-time starter out of Golden Sands.
Yeah, he broke out of the gate real well and never looked back after that, you know, opening up by 6.5 at the end. And it was pretty easy coming down the lane, too. So it was a really good run by that first-time starter.
74 for him on the top, like we just said. Salacious and Accusion gets a 60 running second, improving slowly, 47 to a 53 to a 60. It's that nice little progression that we like to see. And the horse was also a decent price at 5-1.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good run, definitely. And, it really felt like Salacious Accusation had just kind of chased and really was in a no-win situation. You know, the unfortunate part is, you know, you're sitting behind a horse. Now, do you pressure him? Do you not? You know, you're kind of in no man's land, and Salacious Accusation just let Ain't No Elmers go. And the unfortunate part is Ain't No Elmers did not look back at all.
I know that you had wanted to talk about kind of looking at post-time odds compared to morning line odds, so I'll start off it with you. What to you is, like, do you like to see the early money on a horse, or do you like to see it go gradually down the line from 20 to 15, 10 to 5 as the minutes progress?
It really depends, too. If I'm focused on one track and I see that, you know, all of a sudden the odds open up and the horse is 1 to 5 or is taking a ton of money and then gradually kind of drifts back up to the morning line, it really makes me kind of wonder what's going on there. And it kind of makes me have to take a second look to see if there was something that I missed with a horse or try to find any reason why that horse would be taking so much extra money at the beginning. You know, looking at first time starters, especially with maiden special weights, A lot of the time, horses that take money are really poised to make a good debut. Now, whether or not they're good enough is a different story, but at least you know that they're kind of coming in, you know, prepared. With Liam's Tempest, you know, she drifted up to 7-1, and I thought that a lot of people were kind of looking at the sixth place beaten 3 3/4 and weren't really looking at the fact that it was turf. And so I really liked going into the race. I really liked that angle. Now, only if I would have listened to the public, because Liam's Tempest, you know, finished off the board. But I was happy with putting my money there.
I think for me, when I look at races after the fact, a horse like Salacious Accusation going from a 53 to a 60, if I have that horse anywhere on my ticket or I think that there can be improvement and the horse does improve, to me, my handicapping wasn't wrong. I just kind of got unlucky. The thing for me is Nasty was morning line 3-1 and went off at 3-1. With a barn like Brad Cox, usually you would want to see that downward drift in odds. So when I saw that, I was like, I might be in trouble here. No one's really going with this horse. What did I miss on him that everyone else does see?
Right. And with Salacious Accusation being out of Jerseytown, I wasn't sure what to do with that Remington Park October 30th race on the mud, because the pedigree screams, I love mud.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if that 53 was indicative of, hey, I the horse liked the track conditions more than anything else, or whether the horse is just improving. So in that instance, it's kind of hard to judge which way to go.
I think it's also interesting when you see a horse coming from Remington to Fairgrounds with Sam Houston workouts, just not that she was forgotten, but 5-1 is a much better price than the other three horses that finished first, third, and fourth. So I just feel like it matters when people see what people consider B tier tracks. It definitely can lift the odds up on a horse.
Yeah, absolutely. You have the Ready For My Close Up, who's also trained by Steve Asmussen, who took quite a bit of money going into the race, and especially considering that he was using his regular jockey in Ricardo Santana Jr., it made you think that that horse was more poised for a better second time effort than Salacious Accusation coming into the race, you know, using Florent Giroux in her third start.
What do you say, Marshall, we jump into our next race? It was race number 10 on the Fairgrounds card. It's the Fairgrounds Grade 3 going 1 1/8 on the turf course. I had no idea what to do in this race. Where did you end up?
This was a tough race. There were a lot of horses that were all kind of in the same class level. You had a pretty big favorite in Synchrony, who had run in the Woodbine Mile, among other grade ones, and it really kind of shone well in those races. So going into a grade three, you'd think that Synchrony was going to take a lot of money. I just didn't think that that he was going to come down to 7-5 before post. I liked Factor This going into the race, and I liked him even more after the scratch of Sailing Solo, because Sailing Solo and Factor This had dueled on the front end in their previous race in the Colonel Bradley, and Sailing Solo had drifted all the way back, and Factor This hung on pretty well to finish third in that race. And I figured that without Sailing Solo in there, that Factor This could get out to an easy lead and just hope that that Sailing Solo could finish out the distance, and B, that he would kind of go unchallenged out on the lead and kind of get brave. So I loved Factor This going into it. I also did like Synchrony, obviously the big class edge over a lot of these. Mm-hmm. I just felt like Synchrony was going to be coming from too far back ultimately, and especially on a turf course that had kind of proven itself to favor those on the front end. And then the other one that I liked actually was Midnight Tea Time. Midnight Tea Time had shown to be able to be a little more tactical and be kind of closer to the pace. And I thought that the upgrade from Adam Pesquisa to Joel Rosario jockey-wise would help immensely down the stretch as well. So those are the three that I really keyed around.
I wanted to ask you just about factor this. When you see a horse that duels on a lead like that and they call it, you know, losing the battle or it's losing the battle or winning the war or something along those lines, and then you see the horse coming back and you see the horse that it just dueled with scratch out, you must be feeling so giddy being able to know that this horse might be alone on the lead and might actually get a very favorable trip. And everyone who, when you see that, the horse ran third, the other horse it dueled with backed out completely. This horse has definitely got some heart, and definitely you're going to get nice elevated odds because of it.
Yeah, I so for the contest, when I entered my contest picks, and I didn't put factor this as my top pick because Sailing Solo was still in the race. Mm-hmm. And once I saw that Sailing Solo had scratched, I was ecstatic to see that. And, you know, you just got to hope that factor this could break out of the gate quick enough and get out to the lead and hopefully be alone on that lead. But yeah, I was very happy. And, you know, looking at the price too, you know, taking a lone leader at 8-1 is well, way A-okay for me. That's for sure.
For me, I ended up on the second choice in this race. Don't Blame Rocket. Julien Leperoux, for me growing up, was one of my favorite jockeys. The horse had won the last three races in a row. Norm had kind of understood where to place his horse. He'd won at Saratoga, then brought him to Kentucky Downs and won, and then puts him in his what looks like to be the first stake try and wins by three. Now, I know me and you had talked off air and how the horse had gotten a perfect trip, but the 48-3 work right after that kind of told me the horse is still in form. And when Synchrony, like you said, took so much money, I thought I was getting the best of it with this horse right around 2-1.
Yeah, I did like Don't Blame Rocket until I saw that Colonel Bradley, the replay, because he sat the pocket, was able to come out and just hit, got first run on the leaders and really won drawing away just because of that perfect trip. And I felt that if Factor This could get out to an easy lead, that Don't Blame Rocket wasn't going to get the same trip. And that made me really leery about that. Also looking at a horse like Botswana, who I thought also had a little bit of speed too, it may cause not as advantageous of a trip for Don't Blame Rocket as the Colonel Bradley.
Now, you had said that you hadn't picked Factor This in the contest, but where did you go wagering wise with this horse? Was it just a win bet? Did you have him in picks like pick threes, pick fours? Was it just exactas?
Yeah, so I had a pretty decent win bet on him. I also had him on top in exactas and tries. And then also he was one of my two singles in the pick four as well. So it was a good day.
It was definitely a good day for me. Don't Blame Rocket, just a little win play show across the board. Let's see who can get it done in race 10 here at the fairgrounds. Factor This gets it done for Marshall, 1880, buyer of 102. Synchrony ran second, ran a tough 100. Marshall, thoughts out of this race?
I thought it was actually a really good race. I'm excited to kind of see where a lot of these horses end up afterwards. Just because of the full field, too, there was a lot of trips that I saw coming from the closers. But overall, I think class-wise, I think this race will stack up pretty well.
Now, obviously, with a horse like this winning on top, coming from she was on the lead the whole entire time. Was there a bias towards speed on the turf, you think, today, or was it just right trip, right time?
It felt like, not only on the turf, but the dirt as well, that there was a inherent bias to speed. Now, how much of it was, you know, how much of the win was aided by that, I don't know. I've seen a lot of smart people on Twitter too kind of deny the fact that there was a speed bias on both turf and dirt, but it felt to me, especially with the rails down in the brand new grass, that there was absolutely nobody really closing. So I would definitely take a second look at any horses closing in this race, and it kind of made me be even more impressed with Synchrony coming out.
Now, he ran 102 buyer. Let's say that you believe that there was a bias. Now, for me, I'm someone who I do believe in ability figures, so if I see a horse on a slow pace, win wire to wire, in a maiden race and then it comes out into an allowance race, let's say they were in a buyer of 85, I usually bump it about 5 to 7 points less just because everyone's going to see that 85. But if I can read it as an 80, there's a lot of extra value to be found in that type of handicapping as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think that anyone who does ability-based figures is not only crazy, because it's a lot of extra work to be able to do that and to be able to keep tabs on it, but it's very smart, because you will see a lot of patterns and a lot of things that you know, smart bettors or other bettors aren't going to see just based on that. So I think it's a wonderful idea.
Is there one horse out of this race that, if someone was just starting out by doing a stable mail, that you would tell them to add to their stable mail?
Off the top of my head, Midnight Tea Time, I thought, ran into some trouble coming down the stretch, but still closed pretty well. I also thought Synchrony, again, you know, finishing in a flurry as well. I would love to see where Synchrony shows up next as well. But as far as like universal bad trip horse is concerned, nothing glaring. Like I said, I think overall this race was very good. And I think moving forward, a lot of these horses will be able to improve off of those efforts.
It'll be interesting to see where these horses come back next. Let's step on to the last race that we're going to go over. It was race 11 at Fairgrounds. It was the Rachel Alexander Grade 2 going 1 1/16 miles on the dirt. It was the return of the 2-year-old champ, British Idiom. Where'd you go here, Marshall?
I really liked Finite coming into this race, not only based on the price, because, you know, we all knew going in that British Idiom was going to take a lot of money. I didn't think that we would see 4 to 5 come post time, but I really thought that she would take a lot of money. And having to not only improve off of that, the juvenile race, but having to deal with the layoff as well, kind of made me really leery about using this horse on top at all. I thought that there were lots of horses coming into the race that had kind of, you know, better recent form, obviously, and were going to be more fit for the distance as well. So I really liked Finite coming into it. I thought Silver Bullet Day was a really nice race. I also thought that the horses coming out of that were pretty decent, like Ursula and Tempers Rising as well. There was a lot of steam on the number 3, Swiss Skydiver, coming into the race. You know, Ken McPeak is never shy about letting people know about how his horses are doing. And it just seemed like there was a lot of steam coming into the race on this horse. And considering that Swiss Skydiver stayed at the 8-1, suggested that she had took some money due to the fact that British Idiom took so much as well. I was all Finite in this race.
For me, it was definitely a tough race. British Idiom, for horses that win first time out, the layoffs don't bother me as much. But even if she runs back to the 85, the Alcibiades, Finite, these other horses with current form could improve as much as well for that. This was her first start at 3. I was trying to avoid. So that left me with the 3 horses out of the Silver Bullet Day. And if you look at the odds, Finite at 5-2 was a heck of an overlay. I ended up on Ursula going off at 11-1. And Tempers Rising going off at 6-1 wasn't that bad either. When all these horses are winning or losing a race by less than a nose or a neck, and Finite's going off at 3 times less the price than the other 2 horses, you're just trying to find value. Finite was probably the best of the 3 to begin with, but I was just looking for a little bit of something spicy here in this race. So for me, Finite was probably the right pick. I ended up going with the 2 horses underneath of her.
Yeah, I thought that I knew what Tempers Rising was about. You know, you have 6 starts since August of 2019. So I kind of thought I knew Tempers Rising, and my enthusiasm for that horse was a little bit less.
Okay.
I also, with Ursula, I thought that Ursula had room for improvement, especially, again, losing by a neck to Finite. And, you know, basically getting hounded by Finite the entire time around the track. You know, I thought Ursula kind of took the worst of that. So I thought that Ursula definitely could move forward.
Where did you end up going from a betting standpoint? We're trying to both avoid British idiom. Where did you end up? Was it just a win bet or did you go multis?
I did do a nice win bet on Finite. And also, don't ask me how, but I was singled to Finite in pick fours. So I when I put my tickets through, I felt good about it. And then coming up to the race, I was like, man, what was I thinking? What did I do there? But I ended up lucking out with British idiom finishing a far back second.
For me, it was just the win place show bet on Ursula. Let's see who wins this year's Grade 2 Rachel Alexandra right now. And Finite gets it done, paying $740 with a nice 90 buyer. Nice pick, Marshall.
Yeah, I thought the race shaped up very well for Finite, being able to sit off the leaders. And luckily, His Glory and Ursula really kind of ding-dong on the front end a little bit. And, you know, having His Glory kind of pull out ahead a little bit, the pace was not super fast, but it was legitimate, 24, 47, and 112. But, you know, definitely the class of Finite showed coming around the turn and just lengthening that lead coming into the finish line.
I think for everyone who wants to say, oh, British idiom is just, you know, a two-year-old precocious type, to me, when they first come back, it was the first prep. She ran second. She's going to get points for the Oaks gate. I thought the race was perfectly fine by her.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, British idiom might have enough points right now to be able to get into the Oaks. If not, she's real close. So I think that was definitely a very valuable three-year-old debut, and I think that the sky's the limit for British idiom.
Any horses out of here that you think, like obviously a couple of the horses that were overmatched will need to drop in class, but any that you're looking forward to betting back, or you just think that Finite, you think we're going to get as good a price on Finite next time? I don't think so.
No, I think that the word is out on Finite after, you know, beating British idiom by, you know, almost five lengths. So I think Finite will be a very short price going into the next race. And you know, I think British idiom coming into the next race, I think will be kind of interesting. You know, hopefully we can see a little bit better price. And the fact that, you know, British idiom was second to last, you know, going into the, you know, basically coming into the corner, into the final corner, it'll be interesting to see if we can get almost a little more tactical ability for her. I think it'd be beneficial for her to be able to be a little bit more close than, you know, basically last.
I know it's interesting when you look at certain horses. Finite's been under her last two races, she was under even money. British idiom had never been under even money until that race on Saturday. I find it interesting that I wonder how many two-year-old champions had resumes like that where their lowest odds were higher than 2-1.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. It's not something that I ever actually thought about, but I was glad that Finite was able to drift up even from that 2-1 morning. I would have took 2-1, no problem. But the fact that she was able to drift up a little bit was really just a gift.
Now, I know that we had not talked about either of the Risen Star races. I don't know. I haven't really prepped you for this. Did you have any thoughts real quick on either of the two legs?
I wasn't, you know, visually, I wasn't the biggest fan of either race. I thought that the first rendition of the Risen Star was better, which would be race 12. But I'm not super sure that I want any horses out of those races. I thought Mr. Monomoy ran well, but he also had, you know, was a lone leader and was mm-hmm. able to kind of dictate things on his own. And then once he was in the stretch, it was all over. You know, someone like Enforceable, who I think really does want the distance and really will relish more distance, ultimately is just coming from too far back and really relies on pace and a good trip in order to get those wins in the end. So it's tough to take any of these horses really moving forward. But you know, I think the biggest question is the favorites in both races basically floundering was definitely an interesting thing, especially in Eau d'Or in the second rendition of the Risen Star.
I think that an Eau d'Or will be a horse very interesting to see next time out. Going back to the British Idiom race real quick, we're recording this Monday morning, and we heard some pretty bad news coming out of Oaklawn this morning. You want to talk about it, Marshall?
Yeah, you know, I saw the news on Twitter that Therese had broken down during a workout this morning, and you know, it's awful news. And then, you know, of course, due to the injury, the unfortunate part is Therese had to be euthanized due to that. So it's always somber, and it's always hard to be able to not see these, you know, potential superstars grow up and really show us what, you know, what they really are. And, you know, someone like Therese, where it felt like this guy absolutely was the limit on talent, you know, it's really a shame and really sad for everyone involved to not be able to see that.
And I just wanted to send my well wishes and prayers out to the connections owners, everyone who had an influence or a day with this really good filly. Marshall, that's pretty much all the time we have for today. Where can people find you on social media?
At G1 Handicapping.
Thank you so much, Marshall, for taking some time to talk all these different fairgrounds races. Like Pete has said in the past to you, no good deed goes unpunished. I'm sure we will be talking again very soon.
Hey, I'm just happy to be a part of this. You know, what we're doing at In the Money Media is great, and I'm more than happy to talk horses with you anytime.
Thanks a ton, Marshall. Thanks to all of our great fans for listening to this show, and my special guest, Marshall Sterling. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin, and our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Lugenbuehl, and we will see you next time. Nowhere to hide from all of this.